right? Okay, here we go. We're on the Sanhedrin Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. Yesterday we started, this week we started the new perek. And we have three machlokasim, Reb Meir and the Chachamim, to review the three machlokasim. How we choose the three judges was machlokas number one. The next machlokas is Reb Meir, one second. Okay. That each one can passel. Reb Meir says each one can say it's not good for me to have this judge. He can knock out the judge. Reb Meir and the Chachamim say, when can you do that? When you have a proof that they're close relatives or they're puzzled to testify. But if they're regular, good, kosher witnesses, nothing you could do to puzzle them. And the same thing with witnesses. So now the Gemara wants to suggest that one of these machlokasim, the Chachamim and Reb Meir, is going to be dependent on another concept. It's going to revolve around another concept. As the Mishnah continues, V'chachamim omrim, the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir about passling up the judges. Neima, let us suggest that the machlokas, Reb Meir and the Chachamim, is bidder Reb Yehuda Amarav Kamifligi. They are fundamentally arguing regarding what Rabbi Yehuda Marav says in the following thing. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, says, Ein Eidim Chosim Al Ashtar, witnesses cannot sign a document, Ela Im Kein Yodim Mi Chosim Imoem, unless they know who else is signing with them. Okay? Now, what does that mean? Let's take a look at footnote 22. The law is that if several witnesses sign together on a document and one of them is later found to be an invalid witness, the testimony of all the witnesses is disqualified. We throw out the whole thing. Okay, let's say one of the witnesses was a relative. Then we're ready. Once we've already cast aspersions on one part of the testimony, we throw everybody out. And you know that's not good. You know it doesn't look good when you have witnesses say, "Well, we don't want you." It's not going to do good on your resume, you know. And it's not going to matter if you're going to say, "Well, it wasn't me; it was him. He was the relative. What was he coming for?" Well, you were connected with it. Consequently, it's advisable for a witness to inquire before signing a document who his co-signers will be, so does not suffer the embarrassment of having his testimony disqualified due to his partner's ineligibility. So that is a statement of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Don't do that. So now the Gemara is saying that that rationale should apply as well to judges of the same court. Now let's see what he says in 23. Just as a witness would be embarrassed if a fellow witness was discovered to be ineligible, it's likewise embarrassment for a judge to serve on a court together with someone who is unqualified. So how is this going to fit the machlokas? Interesting. Here we can send into our scroll a little error. See, look in the notes here. It's a coin would seem that, and it just stops. So there's something missing over there. All right? So there's something missing over there. But anyway, but they want to say the same thing would apply to judges. I'd have to go to a different format. But anyway, so let's say Reb Meir lays lay to Reb Yehuda Marav. Reb Meir does not hold of Reb Yehuda Marav's principle, and therefore, he does not require the original judge's consent to the third judge. Let's go back to that machlokas. What was that first machlokas, Reb Meir and the Chachamim? What happens? Each litigant chooses one judge, right? According to Reb Meir, how do we get the third judge? Reb Meir now, not the Chachamim.
They both choose it together, the people.
The litigants choose the third judge. Now, do the judges have any say who's going to sit on the bench with them? Not according to Reb Meir. Chachamim say, who picks the third judge?
Two
the two judges. Ah, well, that makes sense. They have a lot of say who's the judge with them, right? Also, let's go back. Each litigant picks one judge, right? So they haven't started, the first two judges are there, they haven't started judging, all right? So let's say, for example, the one litigant says, okay, Rabbi X, you be my judge. Okay, fine. Everyone says, Rabbi Y, you be my judge. Okay, let's say they show up and X can't stand Y and Y can't stand X. Well, they haven't started any proceedings yet. The guy says, forget it, I ain't doing it. So we're okay on that thing. But the problem is once the two judges are allowing themselves to be joined by a third judge and they have no say-so. So that's what it appears. So remember, Rabbi Yehuda Marav says, again, what did Rabbi Marav say? Don't sign on a document till you know who all the witnesses are, because you don't want to get stuck with aspersions cast on you because the other guy. So we would assume, right now at least, we would assume the same thing would apply to a judge. The according to Rabbi Yehuda Marav, a judge should not sit down to adjudicate a case until he knows who the other judges are, because in case we throw out a judge, right, then you don't want to get embarrassed as well. That's the assumption. And therefore, the Gemara assumes that Reb Meir, who says that the litigants pick the third judge and that the judges don't, does not hold to the concern of Rabbi Yehuda Marav, because he doesn't hold of it. That the witnesses you just signed, doesn't matter who's there. V'Rabbanan, who say no, that the judges do pick the judge, Eislut Rabbi Yehuda Marav. He does hold of Yehuda Marav's statement. So they get, look what it says. So they can guarantee that their colleague will be a qualified individual. All right? So that's what the Gemara assumes, that the Machlokas, Reb Meir and the Chachamim in our Mishnah about how you pick the third judge is really revolving around the same essential idea. Do you hold of Reb Yehuda Marav's concept by choosing witnesses or not? Good? Now, there is a little bit of a commentary here. A difficulty presents itself. Since even the sages agree that it's the litigants who choose the first two judges, why is there no concern that the judge chosen by one litigant will be embarrassed to serve together with the judge chosen by the other litigant? Right? So what about that? The answer is that since each judge is aware of the identity of his fellow magistrate before the trial begins, he has the option of declining to serve if he feels that his colleague is unqualified. Hence, allowing the litigants to choose the first two judges poses no problem. That's what I said, right? However, since the choice of the third judge completes the quota, a court has already been formed to try the case, and the newest choice would be shamed if the court was dissolved because one or both of the previous judges refused to serve with him. Thus, rather than humiliate their fellow, they would be constrained to sit with him despite their own embarrassment at having to share the bench with an unqualified individual. So, in other words, once you got the third judge, now we start. Right? So, therefore, that's why that they got within that issue. So, anyway, the whole, that is going to be the machlokes here. Who picks the third judge? Do we have to worry about that or not? To which Gemara is going to say, no, it has nothing to do with that statement written by witnesses, because judges and witnesses, there's a whole different game over here. Gemara says, no, you don't have to say the machlokas, Reb Meir and the Chachamim, revolves around agreeing with Reb Rav or not, because you could say the following. Could say to Kuli Alma Eslahu the Rav Yudah Rav. Let's say they could all agree to Rav Yudah Marav. However, but Vidas Hadayonim. But when it comes to the knowledge of the judges, Kuli Alma Lo Pliga Dibainan. That everyone says you need the judge's consent. They can both agree. You have to have the judge's consent. So what is going to be the machlokes? Ki pligi das bale din. Rather, they differ regarding the need for the litigants' consent. In other words, everyone's going to agree that the judges, if they're not going to like who's there, they can back out of it. You know, that's not an issue. But the question is, we worry about the litigants, what their feelings are over here. Reb Meir holds das bale din nami ba'inan. You need the litigants' consent on that third judge. Rabbanan Savrin, the rabbis hold das hadayonim beinan, das baleidinan lo beinan. That the rabbis say the judge's consent is required, but the litigant's consent is not required. Why? Look at 25. Perhaps because getting both litigants to agree to a single choice would cause undue delay. Right? If they're gonna ask them, okay, the two judges agreed, are you okay with that? Oh, no, it could take forever, so we don't want to bother with that. But anyway, so they're really saying it's like this. Even if you're going to hold like Reb Meir, that Reb Meir says that the litigants can choose the third judge, it still would have to be with the agreement of the judges. That's the point we're saying. Which we thought we don't even tell the judges. And that's why we assumed it was the same as Yehuda and Rav. We said, no. Everybody agrees that whoever that third judge is, the other two judges got to agree. So then what's the machlok? The machlok says, do we also concern ourselves that the litigants should be happy with the third judge? Reb Meir says, listen, we're trying to make shalom. So Reb Meir's position is, if the litigants don't have all the input in the judges, they're not going to like what's going on. So therefore, if you let each one pick one judge, and then at least for the third one, we hope the two of them will at least agree on one judge, at least all litigants will be happy. Come and say, you know what? Don't be so sure they'll be so easy to get along on finding the third judge themselves. And therefore, the only thing you really need, and everybody agrees, you need the judge's consent. Do we need the litigant's consent? That becomes the machlokas. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is clearly, it has nothing to do with needing judge's consent or not. Everybody agrees you need the judge's consent. The only question is, do we need the litigant's consent? That's the machlokas. Now, while we brought up Rabbi Yehuda and Rav, and we thought our machlokas amended, so let's now go back into Rabbi Yehuda and Rav a little bit and see what's going on over there. Gufa Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Let's go back to that statement, Rabbi Yehuda Marav, who said, Ein Edim Chosma Ashtar, witnesses do not sign on a document until they know who all the witnesses are. So that statement, guess what? Tanya Nami Hachi. His idea is also supported by a Braisa. In other words, to know that Rabbi Yehuda Marav is not just a singular opinion, but it's a mainstream opinion. Because we even have Rabbi Yehuda Marav was an Amora. But now you're going to have a Braisa that will support what he's saying. So I know Reuven and Rav is a mainstream opinion that should be considered. Mm-hmm. As we see a number of things where we tell dignified people to be concerned about. So would Niki Hadas means the pure-minded men of Jerusalem, meaning tzaddikim, who are very particular about their comportment and to not put themselves in situations that would be not good. For example, number of things, and one of them will be a support to Yehuda Rav. Number one, L'ho yechosim al shtar, elim kem yodim mi chosimam. They would not sign a document unless they know who is signing together with them. It's interesting. I'm just now thinking in my mind, you know, when you're at a wedding, and we ask people to sign a ksuva, and that... I've never had anybody ask me who else is signing the ksuva. You know, it's. I guess we don't have a lot of Niki Hadas, and you have chashuva people signing the ksuva, or I guess we just don't assume, you know, people are going to just bring any strangers off the street. But anyway,
you can disqualify witnesses for a ksuva, right?
You could. Well, usually the Masada Kedushin is careful not to have the wrong witnesses sign. Who can't sign? Right? Family or a Russia. So I see you could get into interesting situations. Because, you know, it doesn't take much to be a Russia in Halacha. In Halacha to be a Russia. If you cheat in business, you're a Russia. Straight out. If you, for example, do things that are, even if it's legal in Canadian law, but if Torah law is not, if you overcharge too much or things like that, which in Canadian law, I guess you can do it, but in Torah law, you couldn't, or whatever. You know, as long as the fine print was something other than, but you clearly are stealing from the guy. If you're a ganef, if you're not allowed to testify. Or if you lie in court. I mean, I'm just saying. So anyway, so usually the Masada Kedushin, he only asks, are they related? Dan says, is he a Russia? I'd like my friend, you know, but that's why I always suggest when people get married, you know, nothing against young people, but, you know, guy's 21, right, he's getting married. Oh, my best friend, 21. I wouldn't be quick to have him be signing these things because they may not just be learned enough How do you know they're not a Russia? I mean, again, we're not saying he's a spiteful Russia. He's just, well, that's the way he grew up, that you just don't do these things, you know? So even if he's an Orthodox Jew, it still might not be enough. That's why you usually try to get, I hate to be so whatever, but to get a rabbi, you assume a rabbi is not a Russian. but, you know, he doesn't have the temptations that Baal Batim had. But anyway, so you have to be careful. But I don't see people doing this. Again, it's not a law. It's Nikiye Hadas, those who are pure-minded. Okay, number one, what else do they not do? Badin, and now this reinforces our other idea about the Machlokas Chacham and Rav Meir. You don't sit in judgment unless Elam Kem Yodim Yoshim, who's sitting with you. That already, now we understand Rav Meir and the Chachamim. They're both going to agree that the judges have to know who's sitting. And what else? Here, now you're going to know the reason why. You ever wonder why at weddings there's a rabbi's table? That's just been the custom, right? Usually there's a rabbi's table. It's assuming you got a few rabbis. Why don't you just sprinkle them among everybody else, right? Why is it always a rabbi's table? And generally that table is half empty for most of the simcha because they're busy. They only come in for a few minutes. Why is there a rabbi's table? For the following reason. I'm just suggesting. Because the third thing is, v'lo nichnasim bisuda em kem yodim mi mesim. They would not enter a banquet facility unless they knew who they were sitting with. Very good. Why? It's unbecoming for a Torah scholar to dine in the company of unlearned men. Okay, Ber Halacha Der Chaim infers from the Brisa's words who would be dining with them rather than who would be dining there. The Torah scholar may, in fact, participate in a banquet attended primarily by unlearned men, as long as those seated in his immediate proximity are also Torah scholars, hence the rabbi's table. Because you think about it, again, at many tables at banquets, people talk a lot of Lashon Hara. You know, talk about, even if it's not Lashon Hara, it's like, well, we'll talk about the Leafs or sports. And for a rabbi to be on a table where that's going on, it's like, it's just not becoming. Oh, rabbi, you were hearing all about the Leafs? What's new with the Leafs? So, you know, on a rabbi's table, they're talking words of Torah.
It comes to happen.
Right? I'm just saying. So therefore, you make sure that your environment is one you want to be in. And, you know, that happens. I guess that's also why people usually don't invite rabbis to their house. I don't know. But whatever. I'm just saying, you got to be careful. You are particular who you sit with in terms of that you don't... have a crowd that's not, it's not becoming for a person who's a scholar to be in a table with people who are very not scholarly. And, you know, people can be vulgar. I mean, there's all kinds of things. So they avoid that. So it comes out clearly that witnesses should know who they're signing with, judges should know who they're adjudicating with, and therefore the machlokas, Rav Meir and Yehuda, has nothing to do with do the judges have to or not. They all agree you have to know. The only question is, do the litigants have to have a say in who the third judge do you need there or not? That is the machlokas. Now, that's the end of the first machlokas. We're up to the two dots. We now begin the second machlokas in the Mishnah, of this one being able to disqualify other people's judges. So now we're going to have a brisa that will elaborate on the Mishnah. It will quote, it'll be like the Mishnah, but we'll elaborate with questions and answers. Yes?
Just before we go there, this idea where one of the witnesses' testimony is thrown out because he's related or whatever, and the other witness didn't know, that tarnishes the innocent witness. Like his testimony is still valid, his witnessing.
No, in halacha, everything, if you come together, if you're coming together as witnesses, then it gets all thrown out.
So then the third guy comes in and says, oh, but I saw.
But if it's, now it's a brand new witness. In other words, you can always bring, no, because there's already aspersions, you know, then there's, again, not necessarily this witness was in collusion, but it looks like it, and therefore we have to kind of make a blanket rule, we just throw them out. Yeah, I mean, listen, you could see how that would happen, couldn't you? You know, let's see, you got a case, and there's no proof. So what do you do? You want to make sure you win. So you call up a cousin, your uncle. Listen, cousin, do me a favor. Just say the following for me. You're my cousin, you know. What blood is thicker than halacha, right? So, okay, so Yanko will say it. Whatever. And now we get another witness. So, listen, once he colluded with one, how do you know he didn't collude with two? And we can assume that. So now it's up to the witness to say, who's the other witness exactly here? You know, so therefore you have to be careful. There is questions. And once you're in that group, now, if, for example, he brings two witnesses that get thrown out, and then they look for more witnesses, and now two brand new witnesses who have nothing to do with the first two, and they're not related, then you'll accept that testimony. It depends if they come together or not. That's the key component. And that's what we're saying. If you're coming, so if let's say I say, Shelley, I want you to testify on your own. You're just coming separately from anybody. Well, then you don't have anything to do with anybody, so you don't have to worry. But he said, Shelley, I want you to come with this witness. And let's think about that for a minute, Shelley. When is it that you ever can come as a lone witness? Rare, because one witness doesn't accomplish anything. Oh, yeah, all right, okay. But rarely do you bring one witness. There's no point. So you always say, and who else? Your job, Shelley, is to say, okay, who's the other witness? Right, I mean, there's another witness. Well, I got this guy, you know, Schmerl. So it's your job, Shelley, to say, is he related to you or not? I'm not going to just testify with anybody.
No, but if you're just testifying on what you saw, or what
you witnessed, but you are brought as a group. You're brought as a pair. That's the whole point. Shelley, whenever you have two witnesses, what does the Beis Din do? They separate them. They want to know if they're not colluding. That's all part of the whole process. Why do we ask so many questions to witnesses and separately to make sure they're not colluding?
That's fine.
So once we've
to find out about the other way.
Well, why shouldn't you? You're gonna meet with them anyway in court. So just make sure you meet beforehand. You know, in the secular world, you know, there's so much going on before you come to trial. It's not funny. You know, the judges. You know, first of all, now a lawyer on both sides, they know all the evidence is going to be brought in before it's brought in. No such thing as surprise evidence. You know that. It's at least in Canada, that's the law. And that means you can already train your client to know how to lie because you know what the testimony is. But they know. And so you're coming as a witness. Now, let's get it clear. The Torah gives a lot of power to a witness. Two human beings walk into a room, say, we saw Chaim Yankel kill somebody, and we warned him. And now you can kill a guy based on this. We're giving the witnesses such power because there's two witnesses. So therefore, because they have that much power, we have to be that much suspicious, no? And therefore, we go through such a laborious process of questioning the witnesses. We warn them and we say, you should know if you're lying, you're doing a terrible thing and you're going to go to hell and all this. You scare the pants off of them. They're holding out to a safer Torah. They have to swear. It's like, it's a big deal, right? So now you're showing up and the guy says, well, I'm just testifying. I don't care about the other guy. What do you mean? Mm-hmm. You and the other guy are going to kill somebody. You don't even care what the other guy is? Like, think about it. You know, you're an honest guy, Shelley. No question, honest guy. But do you realize that with what you say, together with another guy, can really do something serious? Now, what if the other guy is a liar? That means you're part of doing something serious that shouldn't be.
You're making the witness almost like the judge to judge if he believes that guy. Like, I'm a witness, not the judge.
Well, you want to listen. If you don't care about your character, then don't bother. But imagine, you know what CNN would do to you, Shelley, if you were testifying in a court and you come as the honest guy who is minding his own business and say the court threw it out because Glowinski and Russia were testified and Glowinski and Russia were thrown out because it was found out that there was a wicked party over there. Okay, do you want to be in that newsreel?
Soundbite.
Yeah, soundbite? I'm saying the soundbite. You don't want to be in there. You know, people aren't going to start discriminating between. Well, really, it was Rush who said, and Glowinski didn't know anybody. Yeah, sure, Glowinski didn't know any better. Didn't he know that together with Russia, they're going to get the guy killed? Ha ha ha. So you know, it ain't smart. Now you could, Shelley, but the Gemara is just saying it's not smart. That's all we're saying. It's really not smart because you're setting yourself up for real. Then no one's going to ever ask you to testify again. And you're not going to get Aliyah next Shabbos in shul. And no one's going to make a shidduch with your children. For sure not. They're going to say about you, you don't care about anybody's life. You just don't care who you were going with. And the other guy was a liar and you couldn't care less. And life isn't important to you, Shelley. All right? You know, you wouldn't do that, but everybody else would. And that's the whole point. So therefore, we say, just be careful who you're with. Just check it out. Go to the lawyer. Go to the bez and say, I want to know who I'm testifying with. I said, well, it looks like, let's check it out. Is he related to him?
You're testifying as a team.
You are. That's the whole point. One testimony without the other is useless. That is, by definition, a team.
I just think the onus is being put on the witness and not on the judge to make sure the other guy is...
The onus is on the judge too. It's on the judge's onus to throw out the witnesses or not. That's his job. His job is not to do a fact check on the witnesses beforehand. It's when they come in, okay, they're the judges, and then they start working on the case. But the judge doesn't suffer any recriminations if he throws out witnesses. But the innocent witness would. The judge doesn't stand anything to lose by throwing out a witness. But the other witness stands to lose by being thrown out. And that's what we're saying. Listen, you want to testify? No, part of that is you are taking on a very serious responsibility. And that's, again, the best. You really think about it, the Bezin treats the witnesses almost like the person being judged himself. Because remember, the guy being judged usually doesn't testify. In a Jewish court, we don't listen to the litigant. I mean, he presents his thing, but that's not under oath or anything, because we don't assume he's going to tell the truth. He's related to the litigant himself. The litigants don't testify. Mm-hmm. The witnesses do everything. Everything depends on the witnesses. So you realize how important you are, and they scare you when you have to testify. Realize what you're doing over here. That's a case. Yeah, it's really serious. Well, then didn't you bother to know who you're testifying with? You're not allowed to. The Torah says it's an avera to not testify. So that's your civic duty. What are you going to do if they call you for jury duty? That's your civic duty.
So how do you back out of it if you don't like clear?
What you could say to the judges, I would like to come to court and testify. I would like to, but not with him because I think he's a Russia. So please check him out before I testify. That's what you got to do. Well, if you think. Well, let's put it this way. I know Russia, and as a fact, I know that he cheated me in business once. I mean, whatever. You just know he's in the type of profession where honesty is not generally the norm, whatever. So, you're particular who you're going to testify with. And, you know, you're going to say, okay, you come to court, I'd like to testify. And I know you're going to bring somebody else, but I want you to vet him. I want to know who he is before I come in. And I have a right. You have a right to know who you're testifying with. But so we're not going to tell you. You're not going to tell me? Then I'm not testifying. But you tell me who he is. I'm going to call my lawyer or whatever to go and check out, you know, if he, the veracity of the person. And that's it. So it's really an important thing. Okay. All righty. So you know what? Good place to stop before we start the new sugya about disqualifying judges that are selected by the witness.